4ZLK and 4ZLK and 0TR. 0TR, listening.
4ZLK, mobile.
I was listening. I guess I can pick up a straggler. What's your name, son?
I have to look at my license here. Let's see. How's it going, Tom? Did you call me? I had the volume down. Didn't realize I heard the repeater key up and then heard somebody talking but didn't quite catch who it was.
Probably lucky. Because it was me. I used to ask my mom that, and she'd say, "Puddin' Jane, ask me again, and I'll tell you the same." Well, good evening, Shane. This is N0TR, and yeah, I called you. I just got downstairs and just got in the shower, and Bernice and I went out to eat at that A&P restaurant down on 14. Boy, it was good. Had some good old catfish. She had some kind of beef sandwich of some kind. We was going to Mutt's, but we got out there, and like a dummy, I never thought about it, but it's closed on Monday. So we didn't get any barbecue, but maybe somewhere down the line we'll head back out there again. It was just so hot, I didn't want her to have to make anything for a dinner. Supper is what we call it. But then we went down to the daughter and took her 3 dozen eggs. Just had a real good afternoon, even though it was horrible outside.
Got to get out, and is that a local A&P? Is that a local restaurant? I probably have seen it, but I don't go to Greer much. But I just got to go see the daughters, and yeah, it's a little warm out here. I've been idling the tractor, keeping the AC running when I'm sitting. They technically were not supposed to, but they haven't really said anything in the last couple of weeks, which I'm thankful for. They usually, this little computer I carry around keeps track of everything, and it shows how much idle time I have, and if it gets up pretty high, they usually say something. But they haven't said anything lately, so I think they're understanding of the heat out here. Don't want to sit in a hot tractor when we have to wait.
And your driver either. But I mean, it's deadly out there right now. It's still 92 and 57% humidity. Somehow this thing got put on windshield instead, it feels like. But it was 98 here early this afternoon, Shane, and it said it feels like 107 when we were out and about. And Rusty was out and about that time. He's got some kind of barbershop quartet. I talked to Dave, HSX, I think it is, N4. And we talked about some tube amplifiers for his guitar and stuff. Very interesting. And just come back home. I ran out and there was one more egg. But, buddy, it didn't take me but about 5 minutes to go out there. It was just dreadful outside.
Those eggs quickly before they boil in their own in their own shell. We were in Vegas a couple weeks ago. And when we were standing out on the sidewalk about 11:30 after we had brunch, and it was 114 degrees standing there on the sidewalk.
Anytime Bernice says something about being hot here, I pull up Las Vegas on that WYFF4 app, you know, for the weather. And I showed it. I never thought about you being out there, but I showed it one day at 118 out there. It's been 20, 30 years ago that we went out there on a $99 invitation for 2 days and three nights or something, or 3 days and two nights. But we didn't spend much money, so we didn't get any more deals like that. But it was hot then. We went out to the big dam, Boulder Dam. That was interesting. Well, last night, I thought about you. I worked, several, just along about this time, I think it was, and there was an Echo 2 Alpha on there, and I thought, well, gee, that don't sound right. Well, And it was, he was talking to another guy in Europe, so I just went up there to see if I could hear him. He was on 50 watts. I know that one, the Echo 2 Alpha. It was an Echo Papa 3 ISF. And he was at 14250, single sideband. I'll never hear this guy. But I'd been getting some good ones in the evening. England and Asiatic Russia and Fukushima, Japan. That's where the big earthquake was that got into the nuclear power plants. And then I talked to a fella I talked to many years in Slovenia. But then I seen this one. Now, that's a weird call sign, and he was in Iran. And he told me, we was talking on sideband, and he said, Tom, I'm using 50 watts. And he said he wondered how much I was using. Well, you know, I won't tell you, it was disgusting, but I wanted to get to him. And so I kicked the amp on. And then I worked a Victor Echo 2 JCW stroke BM. I didn't know what the BM was, and when I looked it up on QRZ, it was a Canadian, and he was in Taiwan on Parks on the Air on 14049. So I've yet to believe that, but we'll see if it comes up. But ironically, I'd already worked Iran, and last week I worked, a few days ago I worked Thailand. So it wasn't a new one. And ironically, evidently, I worked them on 20 meters years ago. I'd never heard them down here, that far in the Middle East, kind of hard. And he wasn't anywhere near the capital of Tehran. He was out in the country a long ways. So I thought, well, I'll give him a try, and got him right away.
Repeater time out, exit. Repeater time out, clear.
I said, but it was fun. Sorry about that. This is N0TR. Go ahead, Chief.
Four ZLK. That sounds like a lot of fun, Tom. And I don't think I've heard the repeater timeout like that in a long time. And I didn't think you were talking that long. I actually didn't realize it timed out. But no, that sounds like fun. I didn't get on yesterday, and worked on my bunk beds, got a lot more done on that. I did pull up my QRZ page the other day, and I was looking at the web contacts, and I happened to notice there was a Japanese station that had, you know, how you could sign a QRZ page to a web log sign or whatever they call it, and looked him up. I've never worked a Japanese station before. I wonder if he heard me or something and just happened to look me up, commented on my webpage. I thought that was interesting because I know I've not worked Japan yet. I've heard them a couple of times, but it's rare. I don't know if it's just I'm sitting down at the wrong time of day or what, or just the way my antennas are situated. I rarely hear Asia like that. I guess I must be at the wrong time of day.
Gray line, and it was about 2 hours from now. It was a Juliet Mike 70LW, and I got a card from him years ago. I know I recognized a picture of it on QRZ in Fukushima, and his name is Suki. And when I contacted him, I thought he was running, there was an IARU contest going last night, and I thought he was in that, and they want your ITU region, which ours is 8, or ours is CQ zone 5 when there's a contest. But he didn't ask for that, and he just started a conversation. And he said, great to hear you again. And I was really happy at that, but he was on 15 meters. And I don't use 15 meters very often, Shane. I usually use 40 or 17, 20. But if I see something there, I will. It's been pretty good lately, actually. But that's kind of an odd call sign. JM, Juliet Mike 70, Lima Whiskey. And yeah, I forgot the repeater goes on net time after 8:30. You can talk as long as you want, it won't time out.
I remember hearing it say that, but I just have never, it's been a long time since I've heard somebody time out this repeater. I'd forgotten that it actually does it. So there you go, Tom. Thanks for bringing up old memories for me.
That's the first time I timed it out in years. Sorry about that. But yeah, I just work anything that's out there. I don't care. I mean, I was looking here, and there's Cyprus and Denmark and Bangkok, Thailand, and France. But at the same time, there's New Hampshire and Maryland and Massachusetts. There was Route 66 on the air, and I've worked it many times. But the fun ones are like this guy at 30 Tango. His name was Hugh, and he was in Tipperary, Ireland. That sounds like an Irish name, don't it? Tipperary.
It does. That sure does sound Irish. I do remember a couple weeks ago, I was on 17 meters, and I did hear a JA station on CW. And I didn't work him. I didn't even try, and I'm not sure why. I think I had to go, but I do remember thinking, oh, that's the first JA station, or, you know, Japanese station I've heard in a long time. I did look him up. And maybe I'm just, like I said, I may just not be sitting down at the right time of day or on the right band to hear them.
The upper frequencies are better, almost entirely. But like today, I looked at it this morning, and there's a great line of a morning, but all I see is that FT8 stuff, and that's just not personal enough for me. It's like that sign up there I got. CW is like FT8, but it's for men. There was a cartoon on that here a while back, copy of it. Probably tick off a lot of people. But I'm old. I don't care. But, yeah, there just wasn't nothing on there this morning. But when the contest was on, you can pick and choose what you want. You know, the number 8 is hard for me to transmit. There's certain letters. Z, that's another one. But 8 is da-da-di-di-dit. And I don't know, I want to get an extra in or something when you're running 28 or 30 words a minute. And then Z's da-da-di-dit. And I don't know why. And the L is another one that's pretty hard for me. And it varies from person to person. But I used to talk to a friend of mine that used a bug. I think he was the only person that used a bug that I could ever understand. Maybe one or two in my life. And then the rest of them, they're just different. And I can't even begin to run one. I tried it. I tried a real nice Viperplex at his house. And they're just weird. But I can pick one out in a second if I hear him on there. It might be that Japan would be long path early in the afternoon, or later in the afternoon, Shane. I don't know if you got a beam or not, but I don't. All I got is wire antennas. I had a real nice gentleman come over the other night, Ken, and I can't remember his call. I think it's N4KEN or something like that. I got a nice card from him today and thanked me for showing him around and whatnot. And that was really kind of him. But I really enjoyed it. Real nice guy. He lives up north, up in the Furman area. And he actually is something in accounting there at Furman, but I'd never met him before. And so many of them say, well, we'll be out and see you someday, but they never do. So it's really nice when somebody does.
I'd like to do that at some point. Visit some people, and maybe put you on my list one day. You never know if you're not careful. But yeah, I understand. There's certain numbers or letters that I have trouble with. 6 is one of them. I have a little bit harder time than the number 6. Z, I've got down pretty good now. I feel like it seems easy to me. And you're right about the bugs. I can pick them out, too. I can tell when somebody's on one. It just has a little different sound. And I would like to try it someday. But, Tom, I'm going to let you go. I'm about to about to this place up here in Spartanburg where I drop off, so let me go ahead and clear with you for a little bit. Enjoy it. Say hello to Miss Bernice, and if I don't talk to you later, have a good evening. N0TR, N4ZLK.
Okie doke, Shane. Pleasure's all mine. Bernice is still up in the rain locker. She'll be down in a little bit. I think we had enough snacks for the evening. We had a good root beer float there a while ago. Oh, I love those. That was after we had dinner tonight. 73 Shane, be careful out there. N4ZLK and 0TR.
0TR, KN4RJN.
KN4RJN. John, that rings a bell. I think your name's John. And I think you're the one that's, sound like an astrophysicist, am I right?
KN4RJN, John is correct. And no, I'm not an astrophysicist. I'm just an amateur astronomer. And I like to know what the sun is doing and the sky is doing at any given point in time. How are you, Tom? You and Miss Bernice doing okay?
Got a nice picture up there of you with a cigar and what do they call that? A nice drink there beside of you. There's a name for it these kids call now. A beverage. Doing fine, John. We had a nice day, even though it was terrible hot. And Summit, North Carolina. I don't know where that's at, John, but I enjoy hearing you at times. Night before last, I went out and I relocate some toads that leave some deposits right by my back door at times and toss them out in the garden. And they come up there because there's light and there's bugs. But I always walk out in south to north. It was about 10:15. It was a small one. It wasn't nothing like a space station. But I used to do, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law had a farm up in Kansas. And my nephews, they'd never, ever seen a satellite. Now they go out and sit there in the lawn chairs and watch for them.
This is KN4RJ. Yeah, you cut out a little bit there. Echo Link is acting kind of stupid tonight, but... Yeah, I've only been doing it, well, I guess about 10 years or so. I got more telescopes than I got radios, but we actually watched the space station go over the other night here a week or so ago. But, yeah, you're right. It has been hot. I got in, had kind of a busy day, had an eye appointment, and then ran over to my piano teacher. I haven't played piano in, God, 50 years. 45 years. I'm trying to get back into it, so she's helping me along. But after my eye appointment, went out and got in the Jeep, fired it up, and the internal temperature on the Jeep said 100 degrees, and it was sitting in the shade.
It was 95 on the way home today, and Rusty said he had about 100 when at Bernice. She just come down, John. Well, about a month or two ago, Kendra, we love her weather reporting on the Fox local channel. Said that the space station be coming southwest, out of the southwest, going north at a certain time and minute. And so I went out there, I waited about 2 minutes, and there it come. It's pretty darn bright. So I took my cell phone out, and I actually got a picture of it. I was surprised. It's not very good. And your Celestrons probably do a lot better taking pictures of that. And you probably got a drive motor on them that will even track it, don't you?
Yeah. Excuse me. I've got one that's a go-to that has the drive motor that can track, you know, planets and stars and whatnot. But you can't track the space station. It moves too fast. It's like trying to track a meteorite. It just goes too fast. The fastest that most go-tos will do is they can track the moon because, you know, it's so close it goes pretty quick. But tracking the stars is fairly easy because you just got to keep up with the rotation of the Earth. But yeah, space station orbits every 90 minutes. So he sees a sunrise and a sunset every 45 minutes. So he's moving along at a pretty good clip.
Sure. Yeah, I think about 18,000 miles an hour. It's pretty fascinating, and yes, it does move fast. When back in the old days, when I had a dark room and did some professional photography on the side, just industrial stuff, and I tried taking pictures of stars and different things like that, and like a dummy, I didn't realize that all I'd get was they look like hyphens all the way across my film.
Is KN4RG, and yeah, you've got to stay with them, and that's the only way you can get some clear shots is you got to have a tracking scope to to keep it with it. Otherwise, you just get smears if you get anything at all.
We were relatively poor, real poor, and so I wanted an intervalometer to do something like time lapse and things like that. I always thought that might work on it, but I don't know. I'd probably need a synchronous motor or something of that nature to do that. But it's way above my pay grade, put it that way, John. You talk way above my understanding of it, because astronomical stuff is really a booger. My nephew flies, our nephew flies, one of them, flies 787s, and he had a bachelor's degree from University of Kansas in meteorology, and he's pretty smart at that. And I know the guys on the big plane that I flew on, we had a sextant and a drift meter, and they'd take a sun shot or a star shot, and that was always fascinating, but way above my understanding, put it that way.
Is KN4RG, and yeah, Tom, it's the problem with astrophysics is that there's there's so much of it. There's a whole lot of stuff out there, and there are astrophysicists actually specialize in various things, because it's like you know, it's like a doctor. You've got general practitioners, and then you got guys that specialize all the way down to the toenails, and studying the entire universe is a bit much, so yeah, it takes some doing. And the fact that they can figure out exactly where a thing is going to be at a given time is what, you know, the math involved in that is it astounds me.
I used to drive up in the mountains when I was stationed. Well, what mountain? It was not like the ones down here, but we were in Mountain View, California, near San Jose in that area, and we'd drive up to Milpitas, California, and there was an observatory up there, and that was pretty fascinating. Never did get to go in it, but it's a fascinating hobby. My uncle, Larry, he worked for quite a while for called Ball Aerospace, the same ones that make Ball Mason jars. And he lived in Boulder, Colorado, I think, or Longmont. And I think that facility was at Boulder, but he took me through it. And we had to put on these white suits and all to go into this room where the satellite was at. I think it was, I can't remember the name of the satellite, GOESS or something. It's been way back in probably, what, the 80s, Bernice? Something like that. And he was an inspector there. And I actually got to lift one side of, you know, they were just starting to build this, the base of that satellite. Got to touch it and lift up just one corner. And it was like a honeycomb. But it was some type of a weather satellite. Boy, that was a fascinating facility. I remember they had helium vessels all around in there, which gets you down around absolute zero.
This is KN4RG. Yeah, it was probably the GO satellite. That's a weather satellite. I've actually got a link to that on my QRZ page, where you can see what the weather's doing in our neck of the woods from space. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. That would have been cool. I've never been in a NASA facility or even close to a spacecraft, but I have, you know, looked kind of fascinated with what's going on in the sky, and And then when I was running the net down, when I was down in South Carolina there for a while, somebody asked me about, you know, sunspots and what was going on there, and I hadn't even paid any attention to it. That's when I started following the sun, saying, hey, well, that does really affect propagation and radio contact and all kinds of nasty things. So I'm kind of keeping an eye on it now.
Well, it's a nice hobby, John, and I'm sure a lot of people enjoy hearing what you have to say about it. I'm just fascinated by seeing satellites, but I think, well, no, the space station's in very low orbit, but I think this was it was going from south to north, so it was way up there, and it took several minutes to go across up there, moving slowly compared to the space station. I have no idea what it was. I'm getting so old, when I lean backwards and look up, I stumble at times. I'm 76, but my feet have got some screws in them and stuff. But because it's just pure luck, because I don't know when they're going by. But yeah, that was a really great tour. He inspected resistors and different things of that nature that were going into outer space, and they would age them, and they'd do it by heat and different methods, and I think they'd age them for what was the equivalent of 10 years in outer space before they'd ever even put them into the satellite. It was very interesting and beautiful out there, I'll tell you for sure. I was sent out there to work on the at Littleton, Colorado, on the water treatment plant for the city of Denver, which could process up to 1 million gallons a day, they told me, after it was completed.
Came for it, Jim. Yeah, it's a million gallons a day. That's quite a bit, yeah. Yeah, when you think about the space environment, you get outside Earth's atmosphere, and in addition to having no air, the temperature swings from being on the sun side to not on the sun side is just, you know, thousands of degrees difference in temperature, and then there's the radiation and all the other stuff going on in there. So yeah, that's kind of hard on electronic components. if it's facing the sun, it's boiling, and if it's not facing the sun, it's freezing. So it's like, and you can do that in a single rotation. So yeah. Those things have to be fairly hardy.
It's probably almost down near absolute zero up there. I don't really know, but 400-some degrees below, I think. But a nasty environment. Did you hear where that one lady went out the other day and her space suit started leaking water in it? That'd give you a bad feeling.
No, I didn't hear about that one, but yeah, that would... That would be somewhat disconcerting to realize that you're out in space and your suit's starting to leak. Yeah, that would not be good. There was a picture in the newspaper that they took off a video. They had a video on the news here a few nights ago about the two astronauts that kind of got stuck up there. They were supposed to be up there for 10 days, and now it's going to be another couple of weeks before they get back. The guy had this long, curly black hair, and they were interviewing them via the camera, and, of course, using zero G, and she doesn't have her hair tied down, so it's all just sticking up like like a great big huge mane. I thought it was kind of a funny video and funny picture. I don't know if you saw that.
Totally. And you'd think she'd had a hairnet on or something. I would have thought that the least little thing could contaminate stuff aboard that space station. I bet it was sticking straight up a foot. It reminded me, we went through the Museum of Science and Industry in Boston, and they had a Van de Graaff generators and that there, and you could put your hand on this sphere, or leastwise maybe it was just the employees, I don't remember, but your hair would stand straight up when you put your hand on that sphere. And then this other auditorium, when you went in it, they had this, what looked like a bird cage. It was cylindrical but round on the top. And they lifted this guy up in the air, John, and they had these Van de Graaff generators at like 3 or 4 points around that. And while he was in that, the light, and they told him, you need to take your children out because it's going to be loud. And those lightning bolts started jumping, I don't know how many feet. It's been too many years since we went up to visit my nephew. He was he's a medical scientist up there still. And those Van de Graaff generators are in the millions of volts. And I guess that's what they used to partly develop the nuclear bomb. But it's in a museum up there now.
This is KN4RJ. Yeah, he was in what's called a Faraday cage. It protects him from the electricity. But yeah, I had a small one of those when I was teaching high school in my physics classes, and I would fire that sucker up and and get the gals with the longest hair to come up and hold on to that. And it wasn't that powerful. I had to kind of shake their head a little bit to get it, but I could get their hair standing up pretty good. But I don't have that problem since I don't have any hair. But it was they got a kick out of it. And then you could hold your fingers a few inches away from the thing, and the bolts would jump to your finger and kind of zap you a little bit. But yeah, we had fun playing with those things.
Yes, I built a Jacob's ladder, and I had some old light bulbs that I'd replaced in a sepia printer. I don't know if you remember those or not. They smelled like ammonia. But they planted very large blueprints down at our plant where the engineers were. And they had some old ones there, and they gave them to me. So I made a bug zapper that was using 48-inch F40 CW ultraviolet fluorescent lights. And then I built a cage around it, of course, to make it safe. And I put a 12,000-volt neon transformer in it. Boy, it just blew the wings right off the bugs that went in there, John.
That'd be an industrial strength bug zapper. We, in one of my classes, we brought in the old type televisions, not the flat screen, but the one with the picture tube, and there's a condenser in there that is, oh my God. You pull that thing out, and we found a wiring diagram to make a zapper out of that thing, and that thing would produce 1,000 volts, and it was impressive when it went off. We had to stop doing that. But anyway, we did a lot of crazy stuff in my physics class.
Well, I made this one out of that half inch wire, like we got on the chicken pen out of the rabbit wire, is what we call it. And I made it in a conical shape, and the electrodes are at the bottom. And when it started out, boy, you talk about RF interference, it climbed to the top, and I kept making the gap wider. And when it got to the top, it just kind of make an arc up there and sit there and go like that, and it blow itself out because there wasn't no place to go. The neighbors accused me of killing their cats and dogs, but there was no way. But it was a lot of fun. And the capacitors, they can be dangerous, I'll tell you for sure. I worked with that all my life, 483 phase, and we charge up a capacitor now and then, about a 0.5 mic, and then I'd bend the leads over right close to each other, and I'd tell somebody to walk in, it was a new fishing plug, and toss it over to them. But one night I did that to the vice president's son, and he throwed his thermos bottle up in the air and broke it, and I felt really bad, so I had to buy him a new thermos jug.
Yeah, some of my kids and some of my class, I had a class where we were basically kind of halfway doing robotics. We were taking machines apart, VCRs, old electric typewriters, all that kind of thing, and try to build something else out of it. And he's just figured out that if you wired up a capacitor backwards, it would explode. And I'm hearing these pop, pop, pop going off all over the classroom. You guys stop doing that. It's like, oh, Lord. And anyway.
Well, I think that down around that flyback transformer, that's where that capacitor was at, or the damper tubes, and in that area. But some of those were like, I don't know, the second handle on the back of that that picture tube was like 34,000 volts on some of them.
Yeah, flyback. That's what I was trying to remember. That's, yeah, that flyback. Yeah, that thing. Some of those they run 30,000-40,000 volts. Thing, and you could zap the bejesus at somebody with one of those. Fortunately, it was fairly low amperage, but still, it's that's quite a jolt.
We were told horror stories. I took some electronics in college, and we were told horror stories about some guy that got hit by that. But the voltage drops off almost instantaneously, of course, but it's still quite a hit. You knock the back of the picture tube off, and the picture tube imploded, and I don't think he made it, or else it blinded him or something. I forget how the story went, but therein was the danger. They always told us you could take a pair of needle nose, and in the center of all those pins on the back of the picture tube, to disable that picture tube, you would break that off, and it would had a vacuum on it, but it wouldn't blow up. And you know, I always found out that a .22 rifle was much more effective at about 50 yards.
A lot safer that way too. I had I was stationed in Greece at a missile silo, a Greek missile silo, and they had these two, thick as your thumb. Electric wire conductors coming down to the thing to run the lights and the doors and all that kind of stuff. And of course, everything over there is 220, and I don't know how many amps was in that thing. So the lights went out. So this little Greek electrician, he had this little screwdriver with a light in it that could test the circuit. So he puts that on there, and of course, that didn't do anything. So he licks these two fingers and taps the two wires and doesn't feel anything. So then he grabs hold of those two wires, and it threw him across the bay, hit the fin of a missile, and actually bent it. I mean, it knocked him a loop. So, yeah, the Greek, at least that particular Greek electrician, got a real hard lesson out of that one.
Yeah, John, 483 phase was unforgiving. 220 three phase was bad enough. A lot of our smaller jib trains, one ton ones, run on that, but the 50 tons and 20 tons and 10 ton cranes are on 483 phase. And that was really bad. And it was, I think, 1.732 times as efficient as single phase. But you can't troubleshoot for stupidity. And if he was stupid enough to do that without a meter, I think even an idiot light, the neon ionizers at 90, and that would have showed it up even. But to grab it with two fingers like that, no. The dumbest thing I ever did is when I first got out of the service, Bernice said the washer and dryer shocked her. Well, naturally, I thought it was static electricity, and I was only old 21 or so, and I went out there and laid my hand on the washer and over on the dryer, and come to find out my dad had reversed some wires in this knife switch in this real old house built in the 20s, and anyways, one of the chassis was hot, and the other one was ground. And right then there I learned you use the back of your hand, not the palm of your hand.
This is K4RGN. Yeah, the electrician that did that, before he touched his two fingers to it, he actually licked them to make sure he had good contact and just kind of tapped at it and didn't get anything. And then he grabbed it with both hands, and it was like, oh, my God. Like I said, it knocked him for a loop. Yeah, I've been zapped a couple times in old houses where I had a house down in South Carolina where a particular plug was actually, I don't know how they did it, but it was actually, you had to throw two different circuit breakers to kill that sucker. And I didn't realize it. I thought, I've got this one. The light went out, and then started to replace it, and it got, and what the devil's going on here? And then did a little searching and playing around and whatnot and realized that that particular plug was on two different circuit breakers, and you had to kill both of them to actually kill the plug. No, I don't know how he did that. And the guy that wired that house was actually an instructor at one of the local community colleges down there and taught wiring and other stuff. I don't know what he did or how he did it, but that was you had to throw both breakers to kill that plug. Okay, whatever. Hand back, user.
I had a boss once at a printing plant I worked at, and he was very extremely smart. And Gulf States Printing up in Joplin, and he was in charge of all maintenance. And anyways, one night he decided to go down and do something himself. And really, bosses aren't supposed to do that. But it was an office, and he went in and took out a simple 120-volt plug. And he come back and was kind of flushed, and he says, I said, "What's the matter, John?" He said, "Tom," he said, "somebody wired that receptacle wrong in that office." I said, "What, me? I ain't never been in that office." And I said, "Show me," and he showed me what it was like. Well, he took that plug out, but there was another device in parallel with it, and he got in series, I think, with a neutral wire. And so it tried to start that computer on down the line with his fingers. And you couldn't hardly convince that guy. And finally, one of our other lead electricians come in, and he says, "Tom's right, John." He said, "There ain't nothing wrong with the way that's wired."
This is Kane for Origin. That same house that I was telling you about, I replaced a light fixture, put in some LED lights, and they over where the washer and dryer. The washer and dryer was just in like a little closet there, and coming in from the garage, and you know, there was a light up above, and I put I put an LED light in there, and it was a dimmable LED, even though I didn't have a dimmer switch. And I wired it up and said, "Okay, everything's fine and whatnot." I come in down to the kitchen one night, and it was dark, and I hadn't turned the light on, and I look up, and that light is just glowing very, very dimly, but it's on. I thought, "What the devil?" I turn the light switch on, it comes on, I turn it off, and it's still, you know, on, but very dim. And you kind of find out that they had switched the neutral with the ground. So there was just enough voltage on that dimmable LED that thing was always on. Dim, but it was always on. And it was like, oh, for crying out loud. And I thought, well, I can fix this or I can sell the house. So I decided to sell the house.
John, was that knob and tube wiring in that? I've run into that several times in old houses. People don't even know what I'm talking about.
KN4RJN. Yeah, the electrical wiring standards have changed considerably since you and I were kids, but you know, they're a little bit more careful with that sort of thing nowadays. But yeah, some of these old houses, it's like, and you see it all, you know, you see it often in news reports and whatnot, house fire, old house, and it's the electrical wiring, something went awry there and burns the houses down. You know, I'm surprised sometimes when I look back at the, you know, we actually survived to this age.
John, I've seen them where they had one fuse on the outside of the house, and they went up to the peak of the house and through a hole in the gable, and they would run two wires along the ceiling on those porcelain insulators, and they called that knob and tube wiring. One of them was hot, one of them was a neutral, and no ground. And they would go up and tie into that by stripping it, usually varnished cambric wire, and they would strip, you know, maybe an inch off and wrap another wire onto that. Most of them weren't soldered, but some of them were. And then they'd come down, and they would feed a wire on one tube of four and over 16 inches on the other tube of four or 24 inches, they'd run the neutral. And then they'd tie into that to go down to the receiver. I've even found them where they had put a coin in behind the fuse so the fuse wouldn't blow anymore. Nothing I've ever seen in my life. come to me, and I was at a plant where I was the head electrician, and we had 300,000 square feet of machine tools. And he said, Tom, he said, superintendent okayed for me to take you out to my mom's. And she got shocked. And I said, okay, Walter. So he drove me out there. And it was an old house out on 7th Street, I'll never forget, in Pittsburgh, Kansas. And anyways, I asked that old guy, she was up in her 80s or so, how she got shocked. And she had drawn some water in the bathtub, and she had stuck her foot over in the bathtub, and when she touched the faucet, it electrocuted her, and she fell backwards, luckily, and it didn't kill her. And she was crying when she told me this. I thought, well, maybe she got some static, you know, and dragging her feet or something. So we goes down in the basement after I checked out all the electrical stuff, and I'm standing down in the basement, and I found along the wall, it looked like that basement had had water in it at one time or another. And I asked Walter, I said, Walt, has this been flooded down here before? And he said, yeah. And so I went over, and the central air was downstairs, or the central heat. I don't remember now. It's been 50 years ago or so. And the water had got into a single-phase, split-phase motor, John, and that motor was shorted out to the frame. Ironically, the frame was touching the ductwork. And about that time, I looked up and was looking around where that bathtub was, and the drain on the bathtub started sparking and arcing and actually made some flames around it like it was going to catch on fire. Oh, my God, this don't make sense. And what it was there's a gasket in between that drain on the tub. And somehow, I guess, when she put her foot in there, it made contact with that, and then she was grounded out through the faucets. Did you ever hear such a crazy thing in your life?
Canboard, and yeah, it's wow. Talk about a perfect storm. Yeah, when you first started saying that, I thought, oh, they grounded it to the stupid water pipes, which I have seen done. Ground something to the water pipes, and you touch the faucet and touch something else, and you get zap that way. But yeah, that's crazy. That's some of these old houses. It's like, you know, if you're gonna buy and live in an old house, you need to rip out all the plumbing and rip out all the wiring and start all over. It's like it's crazy what some of the stuff they used to do. But I had a house in another house in South Carolina where the plumbing was, to make a long story short, two story house, thin copper pipe, and there is not a a bend, you know, a proper bend in any pipe. There's not an elbow to be found. When they wanted to change the direction of the pipe, they just bent the pipe. And of course, to develop pinholes, I actually had a bathroom downstairs where one day water is coming down the wall over the light switch, just running down the wall, and it came from a leak in one of the upstairs bathrooms where a nail had pierced a copper pipe and had plugged it, but over the years it finally rusted out, and then it just started leaking like a sieve, and I had water running down the wall over the electrical switch, over the light switch. And I was like, oh my God, interesting experience. I got a plumber in there, and he went through and, you know, cut holes in walls and checked out all the plumbing, and he said, there is not an elbow to be found in this house. They just bent the pipe, which of course increases the pressure right there and puts strain on the pipe, and it was cheap, you know, thin copper pipe anyway, so it's like, oh my God. Yeah, I've seen some crazy stuff too, Tom.
Okay, they just turned on the net mode. It's in their OTR. Well, John, one of the craziest things Bernice and I ever seen, she come to me one day, and said, I'm seeing things. And she was looking out the window, and she says, there's water running down the window across the street. And so I went and looked, and sure enough, there was. Well, I know in the wintertime, every winter, there's an old stucco house, very small, one-bedroom rental, and the clientele wasn't too classy either, I might say. And so somebody got real brilliant, and they got tired of crawling through this little bitty hole to get under the house. I mean, it was terrible. So they put all the piping in the attic. Worked real well that summer. Didn't work out so well in the wintertime.
This is game for our jam. Yeah, that's brilliant move. Brilliant move. I've seen some weird stuff in houses and older houses especially. But yeah, that redneck engineering doesn't always stand up to code. What can I say? Anyway, Tom, I'm gonna let you go there, brother. I gotta pop out of here for just a minute and do a couple of things, get ready for net. But good chatting with you, buddy. And tell Bernice I said hi, and 73's to you, and I am clear.
A pleasure's all mine. It's nice to make your acquaintance. I've heard you many times, and if you're ever down this way, just stop by. 73's John, KN4RJN, and 0GR, now clear.